Welcome to Sound and Vision, conversations with contemporary artists and musicians about the creative process. Here's the host of Sound and Vision, Brian Alfred.
Sound and Vision is sponsored by Golden Artist Colors. Golden makes some of the best art materials that you can get. You can find their products online at goldenpaints.com or in your local art store. Sound and Vision is also sponsored by Fulcrum Coffee Roasters. Fulcrum makes incredible coffee that you can have delivered to your door. Check out their website, fulcrumcoffee.com, where you can order subscription coffee services to have different blends delivered straight to your door, and you could save by entering code ALFREDSTUDIO when you check out. Samantha Thomas is an artist born in Texas who lives and works in Los Angeles. She received her BFA from the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, and her work has been exhibited in solo and group exhibitions at Anat Ebke in Los Angeles and New York, Lax Art in Los Angeles, Macaron Gallery in LA, and Mike Weiss Gallery in New York. Her work has been covered by the LA Times, the Huffington Post, Wall Street International, Art in America, W, Architectural Digest, T Magazine, and many more. Samantha and I talk about Texas roots, serious golf, school in California, the materiality in painting, and much more. Here's our conversation. But you're, so you're originally from Texas, right? Or am I right?
Originally from Texas.
From Texas?
Yeah.
What parts?
McAllen, Texas. So it's the very bottom tip of Texas. Whoa. And on the southern border, 5 minutes from Mexico.
Nice. I feel like I drew it. Well, it probably wasn't around there, but our band was on tour once and we drove right down by the border and we got stopped.
Oh.
So that, but that area is very specific.
Very specific. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I haven't been back in quite a while because I feel like I was just always on my way out.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Never to return.
On the way out upon arrival. You're like, all right, I'm here now.
I'm good.
Get out of this place. Well, how did your parents end up in that area?
My dad was born and raised there, and my mom was born there and raised in Fort Lauderdale and then made it back there. And yeah, they're Texans. They both went to UT, you know, the whole thing.
Were they in the creative fields at all?
My mom studied fine art painting. She's a painter. Picks it up and puts it down. But growing up, she had, you know, this designated room, the studio, whether, you know, I knew it or not, it was just like the most interesting room in the house to me.
Just materials and stuff kind of.
Yeah. And that smell, like that super romantic oil paint smell, you know, and it's like, what is she doing? This is fascinating.
Yeah. That smells big, isn't it? I had a friend growing up.
It's so good.
Whose mom was not a Sunday painter. She was like a Thursday through Monday painter. She was into it. And there was a basement studio, and it, when you went down there, that oil smell and the solvent was just specific. It was kind of alluring. Yeah. You're like, what is that? What are they doing?
It's so great. I don't really paint with oils, but I get nostalgic for it when I go to other people's studios.
Yeah. Yeah, that smell. Like, and sometimes in school, I paint with acrylics, but I stopped in school because I was getting headaches from all the, back then we used turpentine.
Yeah.
And that's not so good for the brain cells.
No, it's not.
I attribute a lot of my memory lapses in current day, not my synapse not firing correctly, probably to that 5 years of being around all that solvent.
Yeah.
But but it had a specific smell, and schools have that too, where you just walk into one person's studio and it's like bam. What? Or mm-hmm. shows. Sometimes if you go see a show and someone's working really thick and it just doesn't leave, that smell's there.
Yeah. I don't think it ever truly dries if it's a certain thickness.
Yeah.
You know, that's always possible for it to be sort of manipulated still.
A little moisture locked in forever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So growing up, the room was there. Were you always drawing mm-hmm. and into that stuff?
Always drawing.
Yeah.
I imagine it was drawing till about, like 9. And then I started playing sports, tennis and golf. And golf was actually my vehicle out of Texas.
Oh, really?
Like via scholarship, yeah.
Wow.
So I sort of, it was like very calculated for me. It was like, okay, there's X amount of scholarships for women. Like, this is my ticket out of here. I don't think I was like really interested at that point in scholastics. You know what I mean? I was yeah. just like always outdoors, always. And that was sort of how I saw myself getting out of my little small town.
But you had this notion that, like, I got to go to school.
Yeah, because I think the dream or the desire was like, or, you know, whatever the long term was, I'm going to be a professional golfer. Which once I got to school, I was like, oh, it's not what I want to do.
Well, you got in. Isn't that all you really need to do is just get in the door?
Yeah, exactly.
People don't talk about that much when it comes to college. It's like, you know, anything you can do to get in there, once you're in there, you can kind of, I think for most places, you can move around. And
exactly. I think it's very, very few people sort of like go with that intention set, like, I'm going to do this till this point. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
from beginning to end. But there's so much and so much exploring and learning and truly like finding out who one is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just all the different people and experiences that provides.
So I'm really interested in sports is a big part of my life. And So I'm really interested in the intersection of sports and art, because I feel like there's a lot of people who, and the idea of practice and, you know, working, mm-hmm. like most people's studio life is like hitting the gym in a way, like you go every day and just work on it and practice and get better. Yeah. And, but yeah, golf is, I love the game. It's really hard and very,
yeah.
I don't know. It's like, it takes a lot of mental fortitude and the idea that you could hit this perfect tee shot and, you know, and you lay up really nice and then you four putt it and you're like, what the hell? It's like, you know, it's like fractals. Like the closer you get to the hole, the more it's,
yeah,
know, it's
game of inches or centimeters sometimes. It's also, you know, a very singular experience, much like the studio practice.
Yeah.
And sort of that discipline going into refining one's craft and just always trying to, I mean, what is better in terms, you know what I mean? It always has the ability to just humble you so, so much.
Yeah, for sure.
Every day, you know, especially painting that history, games like golf. And it is like, sort of like, you tap into that mental toughness. And, you know, as artists, you're one day you're like, this is amazing. And the next day you're like, this is total crap. Or like, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, just sort of like continuing always, I think. Always, like, there is no perfecting any of it.
That's really true. Because if you think of someone like Steph Curry, like, I can just hit any shot, seemingly never misses. Mm-hmm. But in mm-hmm. golf, it's like, you know, just like in the studio, you're going to have a bad day sometimes and just not good. But even the best players, you know. So there is something.
Yeah, and you don't have that sort of, I mean, depending on if you have studio mates, but again, such an isolated experience. And, you know, team sports always seem so fascinating to me because you have that camaraderie and that support system in place. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And someone to sort of like lift you out of that immediately, where if in terms of these sort of isolated situations, you have to find your way out.
Yeah, but see, I think you're better prepared to be an artist in that sense, because I grew up playing soccer. So it's a team thing. It's all about which I love. I'm still involved with the sport. I think it's a great thing to have teammates and to learn teamwork and not letting people down and all that stuff. But golf is just solo. It's all on you. Just like when you go to the studio, it's like when you hang a show, it's not like, yeah, well, the other people in the studio were telling me this one would be good. If you don't like that, it's not my fault. No, it's all on you. It's just a solo thing. And then did you say you play tennis too?
Yes, when I was younger.
Same thing, really. So just, unless you do doubles.
Yeah, just same thing. Exactly. Very sort of isolated experience. Again, really, really dependent on that mental toughness, you know.
Yeah.
Because that can really get in the way. You get, obviously, you know, get in your own way of performance.
Definitely. Did you read Infinite Jest?
No.
It's a good book. It's all about tennis.
Oh, yeah.
David Foster Wallace. Yeah, it's enormous. It took me years and years to get through it, but it's really good. But it's about that solitude of the mind and facing something as it's just all you, which is pretty, I think, translates well to the studio. So, but so you got to school through golf. You got a scholarship because you were apparently really good.
I was okay. Yeah.
And then, so you just followed that path, and then did you start studying art once you were there, or how did the transition from the creativity of hitting tee shots and chips from bunkers turn into the studio?
You know, when I got there, my sort of idea of what that experience would be was very like almost super boring, you know, like, oh, I'm going to be in business and like do this, or if this doesn't work out, and without really even thinking too much about it, you know, in terms of like, what is the future look like for me? And my teammate was taking these art classes, like charcoal drawing and painting. And I was like, wow. And I hadn't returned to that place or even thought about anything like that since I was like 9 years old. You know what I mean? Like drawing up into that point and then just stopping, completely negating or forgetting what that experience was, or as something that could even be possible. And so she was taking these classes, and it was just like, oh, this looks awesome. This looks so fun. Like, you look like you're having a great time. You know what I mean? And like enjoying yourself in school, which at that point I was like, not. And so the next semester I took like one drawing class, and it was just, again, so romantic with the charcoal and the model, the live model, and all the, you know what I mean? Yeah. And the smells and the light in the studio, and just, I was hooked, and I feel like I finally found something like, oh, this is what I want to do. This is who I want to be.
Right.
And so sort of like tapped into that. And very shortly after, I gave up my scholarship and I moved to New York.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my brother was living there at the time.
Older or younger?
He's older. He's 6.5 years older.
Whoa.
And so he had been there for a while. And he was like, he honestly like saved my life. He was like, don't go back to Texas. You'll never get out. You won't, you know, you'll just sort of like go back and like do nothing. He's like, come to New York. And
Texans right now are just like, easy, come on, it's not.
Yeah, no, I love Texas. I'm very much a Texan at heart, you know what I mean? The country music, the whole thing, like, I love Texas. Certain parts of Texas are unmatched, in my opinion, in terms of beauty and people in general. But yeah, so I moved to New York, and then it was like super high romanticism, right? Like I knew nothing about art or artists like Picasso, you know what I mean? Like very entry level, like hadn't been to a lot of museums, etc. And yeah, I went to New York and I was like, I'm just going to be an artist. And
but you,
then
you just moved there. It's not like school. I just moved there. It was brother. There was a brother there.
Yeah. Yeah. And he took that chance on me and literally saved me. You know what I mean? And helped me sort of be on that path. And he lived in Dumbo at the time.
What year are we talking roughly?
2000.
Okay, so it's getting, that's when it starts to get a little, that's like,
and Dumbo was just like not even a thing yet, you know what I mean? And he had this incredible apartment, and it was just really, really amazing opportunity. And but coming from Texas and where I'm from, like I couldn't do the winter. I did 3 months and I was like, I can't do this. Yeah.
That's funny.
And so I like literally saw a commercial for an art school, like Art Institute in San Francisco. I was like, I'm going to go there. You know what I mean? Just like not knowing anything. And again, Sean, my brother, to his credit, was just sort of like this divine intervention guiding me at this point. And he was like, I'm kind of done with New York as well. I've been researching a school out in Pasadena, Art Center College of Design, and I think we should go check it out. So we both moved to LA from New York, probably April or May of 2001.
Smart brother, by the way, because
he's totally
San Francisco's not cold, but you know, mm-hmm. it can get cold. LA was the better weather move. I mean, you're mm-hmm. coming from like one of the most southern parts of the United, you know, the continental United yeah. States. So, you know, you got to go somewhere a little warmer than San Francisco, I bet.
And not only that, like he really sort of guided this direction to what happens to be, and I had no idea, like one of the best art schools in the world. And I am so lucky and fortunate and have so much gratitude for that point and juncture in my life. You know what I mean? Of that sort of like guiding hand that led me there.
Yeah. And what did you...
Without knowing anything, whether or not I even wanted to, it was this moment where we get into the parking lot in Pasadena. And I don't know if you've been there. It's just so like... silent, and it's almost like this amazing place, and it's just like a very minimalist brutalist bridge mm-hmm. is the design, and I mean otherworldly, honestly, from where I was coming from.
Yeah, I mean,
and I was like, this is it, this is where I want to be.
You knew.
I knew.
Well, how did, so to get in, did you have to apply with a portfolio or?
Yes, and I had no idea what that even was. And I did night school and put a portfolio together. Oh. Whether or not that was good, I still sort of question, but somebody saw something, and I didn't even get a letter. I got a call like on a Wednesday saying, you got in. And then my first day of school was September 11th, 2001. And then of course, like drove to school and then drove home. And that whole thing was just like monumental. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was such a pivotal, weird time to start. Yeah, but impactful nonetheless.
And then 2 days later, they said, we want you to join the golf team here at Art Center. They scouted you. No, so you took classes in New York, night classes?
No.
Oh, you took them once you moved out.
Yeah, I took a night center or art center at night.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Class. Yeah. And my brother actually ended up going to school with me and he did product design. So we have this like really sweet moment of spans of like 10 years of being really close. You know, he was 6.5 years older. We were always kind of like missing each other in terms of growing up and life. Yeah. Like he was so far advanced. And then we had this really amazing time together of bonding and working and sort of cultivating that relationship and nurturing it and who we are and what we do today.
Yeah, I think that's a good, that 6+ years is good because it's not close enough to where it probably neutralizes all that possible fighting and
yeah
it's just like a caretaker.
Yeah, definitely. It was like, oh yeah, he's my older brother. I don't really know him. Yeah. And then so we had this great time to get to know each other and again just kind of foster and nurture that relationship and like our practice and profession.
So LA ever since. So clearly you've taken to
I
it.
Stayed. You... Yeah. Earthquakes and all.
Yeah. Was the school experience pretty great? Did you?
I loved it.
Yeah.
And for the first time I felt like really tapped in, you know what I mean? Just like it's one of the best libraries, everything. I just devoured information. I was taking grad school courses while I was undergrad, like whenever I got the chance, just to expand my knowledge about literally everything, design, art. I would say a lot of my history is sort of known, and I love history, and it's sort of known via like art historical things that have happened during that time, whether design or architecture or, you know, painting. And so that's how I sort of like know all of that history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of the world.
If it weren't for art history, I don't think I would be as compelled into history, because there was a certain point growing up when my father was like a big history buff and I didn't get it at all, especially to my credit. He would take us to like Civil War sites on vacation, which was not fun for a 13-year-old. So I wasn't that into history, but then art history, really, if you love art, it gives you a real good context for history, and you can sort of, it's like the gateway to actually.
Yeah, you enter, you know, you have an entry point into all the things that are being made, what's being done, sort of zeitgeist, music, everything, you know? And I really just, and got into learning as much as I could about that, and then just so much philosophy, because Art Center is very theory based. So that was just something that I loved even more. You know what I mean? This sort of thinking about everything in such a different way and on a different plane, and constantly asking those questions, you know, and sort of like loving this, I don't know, just loving learning about thinking in different ways.
Yeah. Well, so these parallel tracks of an interest in history and learning about, you know, philosophy and theory and all that, what's the arc of your work as an undergraduate? Like, where did it start? Where did you go? And was it 4 years? I don't know. So I think I did a victory lap. I went 5 years, but you know, in that time, how did the work progress? What changed? What were you making?
Yeah, you know, I was still very much always painting. And I think there were certain teachers that were trying to guide me towards like a more illustration path, but that's not what I was interested in. I very much wanted to be not a figure, you know, I would say abstraction has always been my interest as well, and that history. But even though I love like all forms of painting, you know, conceptual art, minimalist art, But I was always making paintings, and I would have teachers that were like, they're too big, you know, like just shutting me down. And I'm just hauling these enormous paintings in my truck, like back and forth to class, like, you know, for critiques, what have you. And maybe it was, maybe my sort of naiveness about it all helped me navigate that, you know, instead of being told, like, don't do that and being shut down. You know, I still like was like, no, I'm pushing through, I'm going for it, like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like even if I don't know what I'm doing, I'm going to do what I want to do and explore what I want to explore, because so many people, I would say, even in the grad program, would just, they were petrified to make marks, you know, and a lot of them even started painting, like the professor, just like, so the critiques wouldn't be so brutal.
I didn't think of that. That's smart.
And just like, all the theory embedded and, you know, the discourse and of like these really like 4 to 6 hour critiques, you know what I mean? Where just you're picking the bones off of every idea. And at that point you're looking at this work and it's not, you're not even talking about the work anymore. You know, like the discussion has gone somewhere else and like, right. You're just kind of like, okay, well, I don't know what to do now.
And I
would see that and I was like, okay, just stay your course, you know, whatever that is.
Yeah. I think that's maybe I'm sure it happens in both areas, but I think in music that's a much more accepted reality of, you know, there's the people who just say, well, I don't want to go to music school because I'm just going to learn a bunch of theory stuff and then I'm like, what am I going to make? Whereas if you just blindly start writing stuff on guitars or pianos or whatever, you can kind of like find your voice directly and maybe not be quite so bogged down by the numbers, yeah, the theory, the intellectual side of it. And you could just make, you know, which I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, art tends to be a language that's a little more coded in its references than music. Maybe music, it's a little more celebrated to just take from others and it's part of the dialogue more. But
yeah,
it's an interesting idea, you know. I'm still fascinated by that amazing idea to paint your teachers as a defense mechanism. And the ones you don't like, you could paint them on fire or something. Or paint
some
naked.
Was like very, very indexical. You know what I mean? Yeah, it was like color, and like we'd have these discussions. And I remember being in this grad class and they're like, what do you think, you know, so and so, and he's like, well, titanium white is titanium white. And I was like, okay. Whatever that means, you know what I mean? And like, what, I don't even know where the conversation went from there, but that was like the statement. I was like, okay.
That's so funny. Like those little things that stick, like those one-liners. Titanium white is titanium white. There was one Mel Bachner who taught when I went to grad school. He had this,
oh, I love that word.
Yeah, he had this comment to my friend during a crit, and he's like, "It's not that it's uninteresting; it's just not interesting."
Totally.
Which we will never forget. And then, and I just had one of those moments in class that I was teaching the other day in a seminar class of, why does this squiggle make me uncomfortable? And I thought that was a pretty good one-liner.
Yeah.
Those little moments.
Yeah. It's so interesting talking about painting, you know, and having to do it for hours. And I think that is the reaching.
Yes.
Part of it. You know what I mean? Where it's like, you're not even talking about the painting anymore.
Right.
You're going on some other tangent that is because you have to fill the void, the time.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah, it is fun until it's like, okay, we're not here anymore.
Right, yeah, everyone checks out. We're just not even in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would say during that time, painting was just starting, you know, I mean, all of these things go in and out of fashion all the time, right? And so painting was starting to I guess, come back again. Laura Owens had a huge retrospective at MoCA that sort of like initiated and put that into place, especially women painters. And so like that discussion was like happening, and I was just sort of there for that, because it was still very much like painting's dead as it gets, you know, placed. It's deceased all the time.
Of course. It keeps getting resurrected.
Yeah, resurrected, and nobody wanted to paint, and paintings were stupid, and nobody wanted to talk about beauty or being sincere or any of that. Not that even that was my, you know what I mean, dialogue in any way, but it was so anti. And then you had Dave Hickey writing The Invisible Dragon and these essays on beauty and air guitar, and then all of a sudden it's cool again, but he's still kind of an outsider, you know what I mean? Right. Having these discussions about like, well, the painting should be beautiful and we should talk about beauty.
Well, that was punk at the moment. He was so punk for doing that, because, you know, air guitar was like a staple in graduate school, and you know, and thinking about beauty as a viable thing and it's not offensive or we can talk about it as an idea was, you know, very punk, I think, at that moment. Because we were coming off the heels of 90s, just, you know, Identity and the Biennial with Matthew Barney climbing the walls and everything was
And Rosalind Krauss and, like, just super, you know, theoretical and sculptural and, like, the body's relationship to objects.
Then you had Jason Meadows and people like that who are taking like ladders at Home Depot and just making sculptures out of it. And it's like, what the hell?
Exactly.
It felt very fresh and kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. And Jessica Stockholder, and you're like, is this painting? She says it is, but you're like, I'm looking at extension cords and, you know, egg crates.
Yeah.
And, but it was just another entry point, you know what I mean? And just very interesting outside perspective, like a new perspective of work.
Yeah, totally. Well, that's it sounds like a maybe tumultuous at times, but a very interesting place to be at school at that moment where you were.
It was. And I mean, it was probably one of the best experiences I've ever had. And I only did my undergrad because I don't know why, honestly. I just couldn't think of a graduate. Like, there was no artist I really wanted to go study directly under. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that that was the path. That was the course. Like, that's how you get in and sort of network and people come to the studio and see you. And, you know, still very much today, it's such a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think I read that you went to Yale. Is that?
That is
correct. Yeah. And I had friends that were, you know, got into the graduate program, which is so high regarded and so hard to get into. And, you know, UCLA, USC now are crazy as well. But it was just, it didn't become part of my path. And yeah, I was just like working through it, you know, that's kind of what I did or decided to do. Also, I was just like, that's going to be a lot of debt or, you know what I mean?
It's very expensive. That is very true. See, you were ahead of your time on that one. But no, I think grad school is good for people who need it. You know, there's always that discussion. It's like, do you really need grad school? It's like, well, some people thrive on that community and need 2 years to just marinate and all that stuff and pretend reality doesn't exist and just go to the studio every day and have all these people in the studio.
Yeah.
Some people,
I mean,
can do
I
that.
Think it's great. It's like, it's kind of an experience that I feel like I missed out on some level, but then it wasn't my course.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I get sort of like, I would be jealous sometimes of like, oh man, they're all working together in this little zeitgeist. Like, you know what I mean? All these artists coming up and they're all like booming and out of this school and, you know, what's being taught there and who's teaching and under this guidance and like, so cool, you know?
Yeah. It's,
and
It can be, I think it depends on the person. I've loved grad school. I think it was amazing. It was hard and there's a lot of BS to it, but it taught me a lot about, even if it wasn't like literal in the classroom teaching, like you just learn a lot about dealing with people and critique and voices and, I don't know, taking it serious. And then you build a community, which is nice.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it too, because you just get to know people. And, you know, some of my best friends are still, you know, people that I graduate. Although I will say, for any of those listening who are on the fence about grad school, Skowhegan, I think, did a very similar thing in a shorter amount of time and way cheaper. And it was amazing.
I always wanted to go there. I actually like just never applied. I don't know why.
It was
incredible. Yeah, that's something I would have loved to do as well.
But I guess the moral is there's other ways to get that. I mean, people just move to a place. Like you can move to Chicago, meet some people, get a group of friends, and that's basically your grad school in a way. You know, you're mm-hmm. making the community, you're doing studio visits and all that stuff. So it doesn't have to be, you don't have to pay $500,000 or whatever it is now. What did it take your left pinky, you know?
So, yeah.
You can get it in other ways, you know. You could probably, I'll say it. You could probably do grad school on YouTube. I'll just say it. Like you could probably watch enough lectures. You won't get the community necessarily. You could do that on Instagram, mm-hmm. I guess. So you do an Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, grad school. And if you worked hard enough at it, you probably do it well.
You're on to something. You might even start a school of your own.
Social media. Some people are blood boiling right now. There is something about in real life having a studio space. I had Laura Owens in my studio in my second year of grad school, which was great.
Wow.
Yeah, she said, you look like you're trying to have a show. Which, like,
yeah, I mean,
then
that's
I understood
the point.
It after the effect, but at the time I was like, why? Because it was pejorative. You know, I knew that there was some stank on it. And I was like, why is that a bad thing? I don't get it. But then I kind of understand what she was saying. She was like, it doesn't look like you're experimenting enough or being as loose with it. But but yeah, you have all these great voices in your studio and it can be a good thing.
What years were you there?
98 and 99.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm getting old.
No, I mean, you look younger than me. That's not honestly
true. Not true. But we had people like, people who graduated from Yale in the 80s who would come back and talk and then tell all those stories. So it was kind of cool you realize all these places like CalArts, UCLA, they change so much. Everything changes a lot, you know, and there's this idea of what these experiences are like, but it's constantly changing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you graduated, you just set up shop and you started cooking?
I would say like the last year of school, I had a studio downtown LA. That was when LA was very cheap and you could get a space for nothing.
What year are we talking?
2003.
Okay.
2004.
Yeah. It was still cheap then?
Oh yeah. And you know, a lot of artists were moving here for that factor. That it was just so available. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like our artists were here, things are made here, everything is at your fingertips, you know what I mean? That's probably part of a huge reason that I've stayed in LA. Like there's no wait time, you know what I mean? Right. If you're like impatient or like you want to just get started, like you can go here, get that, it's being made, whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, and so I had a studio, but then I had to figure out like a job, and because I didn't go to grad school, like teaching wasn't really an option for me. And you know, that's another thing I like, oh, I missed out on that too, you know what I mean? And then, but I was lucky enough I got a job working for an artist, a painter, Ed Moses.
Wow.
And so nice. So I worked for Ed for like 7.5 years, and it was during the morning to the afternoon, and so then I had the afternoon to paint in my studio, and we were very close, and he was great and, you know, complicated, obviously.
Yeah.
But just, we just churned paintings out, you know what I mean? And then I got to know that community, like the old Ferris guys, and that was a whole other history that was just sort of starting to resurface again.
Yeah.
You know, they were kind of like buried deep in old LA 1960s, and people started to like care about them again and, you know, show them and show their work, like Billy L. Bankston and Larry Bell, and they're all buddies. They're all so close. They were all so close, and Frank Gehry. And so I had this access to this really historical moment almost, but like way later on, sort of in their later years. But, you know, I don't know if it's the ocean or what. I mean, they all just kept working, and I feel like that kept them alive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And like healthy, and like, you know, Ed would go out every night, and I'm like, you're 80 something years old, you know what I mean? And like, they just had this zest for life, like, you can't stop, don't stop.
Yeah.
Because that's the end, you know what I mean? And like, Frank is still, he's just turned 95. He works every day, nonstop, you know what I mean? And they're still, and they, till the end, they've created like really great works, you know?
Yeah.
But they had this ebbs and flows, and then they became like really solidified in that, in LA's history. And I was sort of like privy to that part.
That's pretty amazing. I think it's a testament too to that. That joie de vivre is kind of like based on doing something you love and that you're still interested in, and it keeps you young mm-hmm. in a way. Like if you're curious about something.
Yeah.
I feel like when older people, as I get older and I know people who get older, it's that the ones that are still curious and still actively mentally engaged in something, whether it's, you know, they're a painter or they love to dance, or they love going to the opera, whatever it is, those people just seem to have more energy and keep going.
It was something to witness and be a part of, for sure. You know, and it taught me a lot, and it taught me many things, you know, like how I wanted to sort of navigate my career and sort of like what not to do, or, you know, yeah. what to do, and just a lot of learning about materiality too. Especially like all kinds of different things. And, you know, we were not easel painters by any means.
Yeah.
We were just like, it's very much put them on sawhorses. It was this very physical situation, like throwing these paintings around, spraying them with water, and like, you know, squeegeeing paint off of them. It was super physical. And yeah, just a constant exploration.
Honestly, there's your grad school right there.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I really had a different special experience within that.
Right. I think that's, I mean, in the idea of going to do something or specialize in something, that's kind of the path, is that you study it and then you kind of intern. Like you go mm-hmm. see how someone does it. And that's, I mean, grad school tries to do that with community and people giving you critiques, but I think you get the advantage of hands-on, like working in the studio. And that's something a lot of people come out of school with and they have no idea. Like no one ever taught us anything about galleries or representation or insurance mm-hmm. or any of that stuff. So that's a great...
Totally.
And those people who sadly graduated and started working for galleries got the real deep end of the pool, crappy end of that view of like, this is the dark side, you know, come
this
live
is the
in
dark
side
for
a little. So
yeah.
Some people do that and then be like, screw this, I'm out of here. So you had mm-hmm. a nice sort of in between.
I had a great in between, and it allowed me, and it fostered that practice. You know what I mean? Yeah. He was very much a supporter of me wholeheartedly, and you know, we were very close, and that time is very special to me.
Yeah. So your work, I imagine, is well, let's talk about your work. I mean, so you do different stuff. I mean, you're just tactile. We're talking color, abstraction, shape, light, texture, dimensionality, all that stuff feels like lead players.
Yeah. It my work, my interest in abstraction is mostly about ideas about painting and its history, and sort of navigating those parameters within its materiality. So like, I never try to go outside of, you know, what canvas is made of, cotton or linen, you know what I mean? Or using paint, I'll use it as a surface, a texture, a color, an adhesive, you know? So there's never me going outside of these parameters of its history, no matter if it looks like sculpture or it looks like a textile or a top, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's very much within those confines. And like, those are my sort of set parameters. And I'm always like, you know, sort of addressing certain things, the four corners of that structure, pointing things out. And in my earlier work, it was very much about referencing either historical moments, art de pauvre, or specific artists, and like really sort of guiding and dictating the viewer, like, this is what I'm doing, you know, right. Like, I don't know, like, but now I feel like the work that I'm making now, it's all culminated to all of, you know, all of that reference, all of that sort of me figuring out those ideas and sort of exploring them, and now the work feels very much my own. Like, it's culminated to this point where like everything I was doing is here, but it's like me.
Yeah.
And I can see that, and that's a very exciting place to be for me at this point in time.
Yeah, I think I know that phenomenon that you're talking about. It's almost like you're using these ingredients that are part of certain styles of cooking or something, but then after working with them for a while, you're like marinating your stew to where it really becomes your flavor of what you're doing.
Yeah, and your language and like what you're interested in. And, you know, I'm using like two of the oldest histories of expression right now. It's like painting and weaving, you know.
Yeah.
And just sort of exploring those and trying to create a fresh take of ideas and like what interests me within those, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to weave. I just sort of like created these looms and I was like, oh, this is what I'm doing now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a painting in back of me right now that you can see, and that's thread on canvas, and that's like an older painting, but it has the same language. So all of the previous work really has all of that language that's led up to like this show.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing the same thing over and over. It's just like, now it feels more cohesive.
Sure.
And more of like, yeah, just developed in a way.
Yeah, the approach of taking the main ingredients or the core tenets of like a practice like painting, and then it feels like you're playing, you're really talking about painting by flirting the edge of like moving outside of painting, but you're still using all those materials that are core to it. So it's almost like pushing away brings you even closer to the conceptual underpinnings of what it is and what it does, right?
Exactly. Yes. And I would say that has always been sort of what generates this work, right? Like this sort of like the ideas for me. It's not like me just like finding composition or like, you know what I mean? In some respects, yes, but like just throwing paint on a canvas or in like seeing what happens. Like, you know, it's a little more, or definitely more thought about, you know what I mean, almost. And I feel like in a way before it was so tight and controlled, yeah, within those ideas and those references, that now this feels like so much more free. And I think that's like what I'm really enjoying right now is like, I let the personal in. I like, you know what I mean? And like the exploration. I mean, this body of work is a true trust the process situation. I was like, I don't know about this. Like, what is this even going to look like? Because things didn't really transpire. I mean, it took 7 or 8 months for me to finally look at what it was going to be. You know what I mean? Right. It finally like resolved itself. And I was like, oh, I'm glad that worked out.
Yeah, because it's a long look.
You know? Oh, yeah. I'm like, I don't know. And it's, again, it's that one day it's like, this is dope. And the next day you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, but it's that.
What am I doing?
It's that kind of like that athlete's expression of trust the process. You know, you have to just stay with it and trust that it's going to be cohesive, or it's going to like pull together. Man.
Yeah. And there were definitely moments where I was like, I don't know, should we just do a show of these round tondos, which has kind of become like a signature for me. Yeah. And like, just because I know them so well and I can execute them as such. And I'm like, should we just do that? Like, but I'm glad that I kept pushing and ultimately arriving at this place, you know, and having just like a whole new body of work, because that sort of was such a huge monkey on my back. Like, what is my new work? Like, what am I? Because I'm always trying to like push, you know what I mean? Yeah. And what is that new, work? What do I want to express? What do I even want to say?
Yeah, but I think there's a real value to the dialogue between those different ways of working, because a lot of the, seemingly a lot of the content of the work is these gaps between, or, you know, how you're thinking about how this artist made it from making that thing and then using these materials and making that, and the conversation between them becomes, I guess in a way we have this unconscious thing where it's like, well, it's kind of different. Is it going to, are people going to engage in it? Is it going to feel like it's all over the place? But then if you're really in it, I think the viewer will pick up on the sort of continuity, and then it becomes an interesting interpretation of like, why did the artist move to that? Or what are these, what's the dialogue between these two different ways of working that becomes really compelling?
Exactly. And you know, even though I was like, oh, this is so brand new, and like, I've been doing this the whole time. You know what I mean? It just was just like I said, just a more refined situation for me at where it's arrived. And I'm loving it so far. And these paintings are very much, even though a lot of them are hand woven and have that quality to them, you know, they're not textiles. I don't read them that way by any means. They're very much embedded within those parameters, the four corners of painting and addressing as such, and like color and line, and literally the layers are a reference to history. So that's kind of that reference, you know, like sort of building that topography also within one's own history, you know what I mean? Like all those layers that just make up one's life in a way, you know, and I sort of let that in this time. I've always never really gone there in terms of, but a lot of the paintings titles are after like love songs. I was going through a breakup at the time. And so it's just kind of like all of that emotive, you know, like all that sediment that one carries, and then it just builds up. And so that was kind of like a reference for this too.
That's funny, because I was going to ask you a little bit. I mean, you'd mentioned earlier country, but did you grow up with music in the house? Is it something you still, like when you're working, do you listen to music? What's music's relationship to you?
I listen to so much music and so many different types of music. Like there's one of my favorite programs is run out of LMU here in LA, and it's a Cuban salsa program that is on Saturdays and Sundays, and it's nice. Called Alma del Barrio. Mm-hmm. And the students that started it in 1974 still run it on the weekends. Whoa. And they play like the best music.
The salsa?
Yeah. Cuban salsa, Latin jazz. And so that's like one of my favorite things in LA, truly. It's
so good, right? That music.
Yeah.
It's I was in a sort of pseudo Latin jazz band for a couple of years when I was in grad school, actually. And we were called Cabeza de Vaca, but those were the funnest shows because it just involved a lot of mojitos and a lot of tabletop dancing until about 2 or 3 a.m., which was really
And the fun. Energy.
The energy, there's something about, because I was in other bands that played more heady, you know, music. It was more conceptual, whatever. But, playing salsa or Latin jazz is just like, it's about making people move their butts. And it's just such a fun thing, you know.
Really but yeah, I mean, just all over the place, honestly, in terms of music. It's a lot of indie rock, a lot of even country music, like specifically 90s, because it takes me back to a certain place and time of growing up that is so nostalgic and like wonderful, and it just makes me happy.
Are we talking like Brooks and Dunn style stuff?
Yeah, Brooks and Dunn. One of the paintings in the show is called Neon Moon.
Oh, I didn't even. I don't know Brooks and Dunn. I just know Boots, Scoot, and Boogie. That's about all I know.
And it's like a love song.
That's funny.
That is like about heartbreak. But it's literally the white tondo in the show, because the show is very much sort of constructed as this large yellow tondo and the white one, and one is sort of activating as the sun and the other one is the moon, and they're cascading light on all of these landscapes, these topographies.
Nice.
Like sort of that reference Rainbow Mountain in Peru and China.
That's interesting. So that's kind of like the roots, but you're listening to all sorts of stuff, I imagine.
Oh yeah, I mean,
and what indie rock are we?
Some days
what's indie rock to you, because indie rock means something specific to me. Although we're not that far apart age wise.
No, indie rock to me is like left of center. Did you ever listen to that radio on Sirius? Like when Sirius
I've never listened
first
to
came out.
Sorry, Sirius.
They had this program called Left of Center. That's and cool. Literally like all the bands were sort of, it was like Stevie Van Zandt's radio show and Left of Center. They were pumping out like The National first appeared on there, okay. And The Strokes and Interpol.
Sure.
You know, so like I take it back to like 2000, 2001 indie rock.
Gotcha.
I guess like even before that, when I was in high school, early Radiohead, I mean, all the way through, whatever, like, I love it all.
Nice. And then hip hop or rap or anything?
Yeah, definitely. I have my, there's certain rap that, I guess that's what we called it, like in the early 2000s, you know what I mean? 99, like when it was really gangster rap,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Tupac and Snoop and Rap and Forte and Too Short. And when I got to California, when I went to Art Center, I had a roommate and he was from Marin, and it was just like on constantly, and nice. He had all the good stuff.
That's cool.
And so music's a huge part of it. Audiobooks are also a huge part of it. I making this show, I wake up at 4 a.m. because I just had to find every hour in the day to make this work. It was so laborious. So I had this piece that I made in my house, and I would do it between 4 a.m. and like around 8 a.m. when my dog needs to go out and everything, like the day starts. And that morning was dedicated, like I listened to so much Brené Brown.
Oh, really?
Who like I just am obsessed with now, because I mean, it was just like perfectionism and shame and and I'm like, yes, please, I need help. You know, like, why do I care about this thread not being perfect? And even though I'm trying to make this perfect thing that will never be perfect.
And this is all from Chromoception. It's Chromoception, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's it's not really a word, but maybe I'll submit it. Chronoception is sort of one's perception of time and how they experience it. Mm-hmm. So I thought that would be a great play for color.
Yeah.
Play in this show.
That's a portmanteau that they should add to the Websters.
Yeah, I'm going to submit it.
There you go. So, do you have the dates of the show?
It opened...
Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, I'm like, how long is it up? It opened March 16th, and it's up until May 11th.
Nice. That's a good run.
It's a really good run. They extended it probably because it's been my first show in 8 years. So it's kind of like... 8 years,
wow.
It's been an interesting time. lots of life happening. Yeah.
That's great. May 11th. Hey, that's the same day my show goes down. So we have same show runs. Although yours was a little before mine. But the images look great. I haven't been to LA, so I feel like I haven't been to LA in so long.
You're due.
Yeah. But everyone should go see the show for sure. Congratulations on it.
Oh. Thank you so much.
It's great to meet you. And thanks so much for
doing
it.
Yeah, great to meet you. Thank you for having me. And good luck with your show.
Likewise. Sound and Vision is recorded, produced, and edited by myself, Brian Alfred. You can find out more about the podcast by checking out the website, soundandvisionpodcast.com. And images are available at Sound and Vision Podcast on Instagram. You can check out my solo show, which is up till May 11th, and it is called Beauty is a Rare Thing. It's at Miles McHenry Gallery, 511 West 22nd Street. Please check that out, and make sure you check out Samantha's show. Many thanks to Fulcrum Coffee Roasters and Golden Artist Colors for their sponsorship of the podcast, and many thanks to you for listening. You can support the podcast by leaving a rating or review wherever you listen to your podcasts, and you can pick up the Why I Make Art official book of the Sound and Vision Podcast as well. Got some great guests coming up, so make sure you stay tuned, tell a friend, and spread the word. Thank you.